spiritually minded in reference to walking in a manner worthy of our calling, because that in order to walk in a manner worthy of our calling, we must be spiritually minded. All this begins in the mind, and to be transformed by the renewing of our mind. But, you know, today so much is focused on feelings. Today most begins and ends with emotions and with feelings. People think because they feel a certain way about something, that's the way it must be because they feel about that way. They'll say, well, I have a feeling, or I feel this way about this. Instead of I think this way, it's I feel this way. Or people will be asked, what do you feel, or how did that make you feel? Instead of how does this make you think, or what do you think about this? And so the goal is to make people feel. To make them feel important, to make them feel special, to make them feel valuable, to make them feel included, to validate whatever feelings they might have, whether they're legitimate or not legitimate. And this is really pretty easy to do because man, by their fallen nature, is naturally self-absorbed. And so to validate somebody's feelings is an easy thing to do. Or to make somebody feel good is easy because people are naturally self-absorbed and want to feel good about themselves. And as fallen creatures, they resist anything that would make them feel bad about themselves. To see themselves as they really are, and as God sees us, and to see God as He really is. See, true conviction is not just stopping doing certain things in certain sins. True conviction impacts the mind. It changes the way a person thinks about sin, then thinks of themselves in relation to Jesus Christ. So as we looked at what this is to be spiritually minded and the evidences of spiritually minded, to be spiritually minded. Remember last week we saw that the first evidence of being spiritually minded is that these thoughts are natural. They just occur naturally. They're the result of a fountain of grace from within. They're spontaneous because they come from this fountain of a new nature. Well, this morning we're going to look at the second evidence that we had mentioned of what it is to be filled with the Spirit, and that is that the mind must be filled with these thoughts. That's what it is to be spiritually minded, is the mind is filled with these thoughts. And that's the second evidence of being spiritually minded. And again, this is not natural. No one needs to be taught to be fleshly and earthly minded, do they? I mean, that just comes natural. No one needs to be convinced to think naturally and fleshly and earthly. There needs to be no transformation, no more than people need to be taught how to breathe. That's just simply a natural thing. In fact, even an atheist cannot avoid thinking about spiritual things, can they? Even an atheist can't avoid thinking of having thoughts of God because that's just natural to all mankind. Atheism, absolute atheism, is not natural to man. Practical atheism is natural, but absolute atheism is not. But not only is there no natural inclination to be spiritual minded, there's also a natural aversion to being spiritually minded, isn't there? And Colossians 1:21 tells us that we are hostile in mind. That's our condition before salvation, is we're hostile in mind and therefore engaged in evil deeds. If you're hostile in mind, it will lead to being engaged in evil deeds. There's this natural inborn hostility and aversion to thinking spiritually. And this is the only right, only true, only valid way of thinking about mankind. So to be spiritually minded first requires a change in nature. A leopard can't change their spots. A porcupine can't decide not to have quills. there has to be something that changes the nature of that individual. No one can go from being fleshly to spiritually minded without a total transformation of nature. Because you see, it's not just a matter of a change in what we think. It's a change of how we think. How we think. How we reason. How we, our thought processes. You know, many people are taught in one way or another how to think about God, right? I mean, I was born and raised in the Lutheran Church. You go through catechism, confirmation classes, and you're taught what to think about God, what to think about religion, what to think about sin, what to think about salvation. And so all these teachings of being taught what to think, they can be taught by denomination, some denominational dogmas, they can be just a part of tradition. I mean, people today, what people think or how people think about God, and even what they think about God, for the most part, is a product of tradition. It's a product of culture. Maybe it's a product of the family they grow up in, or even just the product of their own experience. The experience they have in their life dictate and form what they think about God. But how people think about God will be in keeping with their nature. They will either think spiritually or they will think naturally. And so many people have natural thoughts of God, think they are spiritual thoughts of God. You know, universities, colleges, curriculums will try to teach people critical thinking. But what's required for somebody to think critically? You have to have a standard, don't you, against which everything can be measured, to think critically. How does this measure up to a standard? So the question becomes, whose standard becomes the standard that we measure everything against? And so it's impossible for a natural mind to really and truly think critically, because they won't accept any standard other than their own standard. And their own conceptions. They can't think spiritually. And so if what a person is taught about God is not in keeping with the Bible and the Bible's revelation, then it's not truly spiritual, is it? And to set the mind on those thoughts, on those things, is not to be spiritually minded. They might be religiously minded. They might be filled with religious information or religious ideas or religious dogmas or religious opinions and beliefs and presuppositions and philosophies. But their thoughts are not filled with what is truly spiritual, because they're filled with all this religion, or with their philosophies, or with their traditions, or their theories, or presuppositions. See, how we think must be changed before what we think can be truly spiritual in nature. The tree must be made good before the fruit can be good. So when Paul wrote that he used to think as a child and reason as a child, he's not talking about what he thought. He's talking about how he thought. He used to think and reason as a child, how a child reasons and thinks. There was a lot of natural mixed with his spiritual thoughts, but his thoughts himself were from a spiritual nature. The spiritual thoughts, even though they may have been muddied with some natural, were still from a spiritual nature. They were just immature. They were uninformed. But they changed and matured with more light, more growth, more information. He grew in wisdom. So the second evidence that we want to look at this morning, the second evidence that the thoughts of spiritual things come from a new, not our old nature. that these thoughts come from holy affections, from this internal fountain, and are the fruit of being spiritual minded, is first is that the second evidence is that the mind is filled with them. They're dominated by them. They're controlled by them. And this is what Paul tells the Ephesians over in Ephesians 5:18, "Do not get drunk with wine, for this is dissipation, but be filled with the Spirit." And the essentially same thing Paul tells the Colossians in Colossians 3:16, "Let the Word of Christ richly dwell within you." And if the Word of Christ richly dwells within them with all wisdom, that is, they're thinking about it as they ought to think in a spiritual way, then they're going to be teaching and admonishing one another with psalms and hymns and spiritual songs. This will be the outflow of that. Now, if the thoughts are filled with, or what the thoughts are filled with, they'll dominate conversations, right? If our thoughts are filled with spiritual things, that will dominate conversations. It will dominate our lives. Or if someone is filled with wine, and under its influence, it becomes pretty clear what fills their mind with. They might be able to suppress a lot of stuff that is in their mind when they're not filled with wine, but when they're filled with wine and lose those inhibitions and restraints that they impose on themselves, it becomes clear what is filling their mind. But if we're filled with the Spirit, then we're filled with holy and spiritual thoughts. Genesis 6:5 tells us the universal condition of mankind, right? Every intent and thought of his heart is only evil continually. This doesn't mean that all are outwardly wicked to the same degree. Particular people have particular vices. People have their own lusts and desires, as James 1:14 says, that people are tempted when they're carried away and enticed by their own lusts and desires. Paul said in Titus 3:3 that we too once were enslaved to various lusts. Particular people have particular vices and temptations that are particular to their own constitutions, their own personalities. But whatever those are, all their thoughts and imagination and reasoning is only evil continually. Only evil thoughts can come from an evil treasure. A bad tree can only produce bad fruit. I remember talking with somebody one time who just loved Hillsong music and the music that came from Hillsong and was just saying, "Oh, how good it is." And I told him, "Hillsong's a cult. You know, it's part of the Word of Faith movement. They're false teachers and false teaching." "Oh, but the music is good." And he quotes me a couple of lines from a song, and it's like, well, those songs might be biblical or sort of biblical, but that doesn't make it good. You know, a bad tree can't produce good fruit. You don't get figs from thorn bushes and grapes from thistles. And so, a bad tree can only produce bad fruit. Now, we know that the world is full of evil. Just by what we see around us today, just by what we observe and can see with our eyes. But if we could see, if we could know, as God knows, the every intent and thought of the mind, and see just the infinite amount of evil that's in the thoughts, and that continually, we would have a much higher and greater appreciation and understanding for the depths of our depravity and our hostility and the hostility of the mind toward God. So there is no greater evidence, no greater evidence of a work of God in us than a change in our change and transformation in us than the change that the Holy Spirit works in our thoughts, in the train of our thoughts. Because you see, the forsaking of this sin or that sin, this particular sin, that particular sin, that's no indication of a change in nature. People can do that just by the company they're in, some peer pressure. I mean, you see this big in the whole cultural fundamentalism stuff, we're not going to do this, and so we're hanging around this group of people that doesn't do this, so we're going to refrain from doing this. Or they can exchange an obvious sin for a less obvious sin, or exchange an external sin for an internal sin, or even just the sin will change with their circumstances in life or as they age. But to have the nature of our thoughts changed from evil, fleshly, earthly, carnal, to spiritual is evidence of a change in nature. Now we have to issue a word of caution here. Spiritual thoughts do not produce spiritual mindedness. You can't make yourself spiritually minded by thinking spiritual thoughts. But when you're spiritually minded, the mind will be filled with spiritual thoughts, thoughts of spiritual things. So you can't make a fountain by pumping water into a hole in the ground until it overflows, because as soon as you stop pumping the water, it quits flowing, doesn't it? The true fountain has a source, the Holy Spirit. As Paul states over in 1 Corinthians 2:13, that which things we also speak, not in words taught by human wisdom, but in those taught by the Spirit, combining spiritual thoughts with spiritual words. See, spiritual thoughts bring the spiritual words, and those spiritual thoughts come from the Spirit. So we don't read, we don't study, we don't hear, listen to sermons to become spiritually minded. But we do it because we've been made spiritually minded. We have a love for these things, an affection for them, a desire to be more so, to purify our minds, to kill these fleshly, earthly, worldly thoughts and to replace with spiritual and holy thoughts. Well, let me give some indications, some evidences that how we might know if we're filled with spiritual thoughts. Things that can serve as evidences that we're spiritually minded. And just in general, first, a great exercise, just read Psalm 119, all 176 verses of it. Read Psalm 119. Measure ourselves against this pattern. Can we express the same desires? Can we express the same devotion, the same words, if not to the same degree, at least with the same sincerity? Read how the saints in the past have lived, their faith, their love, their devotion, their self-denial. This is the pattern given by Paul. Philippians 3:17-19, brethren, join in following my example and observe those who walk according to the pattern you have in us. For many walk, of whom I often told you, that is, many are professing to be believers, of whom I often told you that, and now tell you even weeping, they are enemies of the cross of Christ, whose end is destruction, whose God is their appetite, whose glory is in their shame, who set their minds on earthly things. So we have these patterns given to us. Do we want to walk in that pattern? Now we can say, well, that was then, this is now. That's not necessary for us. It's not necessary I should be this way or follow their pattern. Listen, Paul said these things are written for us. They're written for us not just to show us what these people were, but to show us how we ought to be. They're not just to be looked at and admired like a painting on a wall, but they are patterns for us. Jesus left us a pattern for us to follow in His footsteps, not just to be admired, 1 John 2:6, that we are to walk in the same manner as He walked. See, if there's no desire for this, if we want to excuse ourselves from it, say it was for a different age, a different time, a different culture, or that it's beneath us, or that it would be detrimental to our own self-interest, or just too costly, or if we want to take the biblical pattern and twist it and to condone sin and say, oh, look how loving Jesus was, how accepting He was, how tolerant He was. He just loved everybody. After it was for these people that Jesus came to embrace. Yes, to call them from their sin, not to condone their sin. We just want to use the pattern to advance our own self-interests. Then what evidence is there for being spiritually minded? Let me give you three specifics to ask of ourselves. Three things to judge our thoughts by. First, what is the proportion of your thoughts? What proportion of them are spiritual compared to other things? See, our minds are filled with thoughts. There's no question about that. It's just what proportion of those thoughts are spiritual and set on spiritual things, on things above. Jesus said, where your treasure is, your heart will be also. And if our primary treasure is in things spiritual, in things heavenly, then they'll have the greatest proportion of our affections and of our desires and of our thoughts. Other people's thoughts are dominated and consumed by often just maybe their occupations or their professions or the desire to get more, the bigger, the better, more philosophy, trying to achieve some sort of a so-called American dream. Some people's are preoccupied or absorbed with family or with children. This is why so many churches out there pander to children, because the thoughts are filled with them. Some people's thoughts are consumed with personal problems. They have a victim mentality, and they're just consumed with these things. Now, it's natural that if we're going through a hard time and a trial, that those things would dominate our thoughts for a season. But it's not fixated on them. We don't identify ourselves by them. Some people's thoughts are dominated by what shall we eat, what shall we drink, or dominated by the future, worry and anxiety over the future. Jesus said, don't worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow will take care of itself. You have enough to worry about today. In our day, and we just see it everywhere, people's minds are dominated by politics, by culture, by all the things that are going on around us. They're dominated by some sort of special interest or how they're going to spend their leisure time or their pleasure. Some people's mind is even dominated by church. To have your mind dominated by church and church things is not to be spiritually minded. And today there is a multitude of things. Some are disguised as spiritual, some are not, that are competing for dominance over our thoughts and our affections. So we need to ask the question, what proportion of our thoughts are spiritual, heavenly? A second rule, do spiritual thoughts dominate at their proper times? What do I mean? Well, see, all of us have down times, right? We all have times when we retreat into our own thoughts, whether consciously or unconsciously, planned or unplanned. We all have times where we can retreat into our own thoughts, just our drive time. And I hear people complain about how long their drive times are. Well, what else are you going to do with that time? How else would you spend that time if you weren't in the car? Thinking on spiritual things? Filling your mind with what is spiritual? Oh, this time should be viewed as a blessing. As a blessing. I mean, I know what it is to sit in traffic, having driven Los Angeles traffic for almost 3 years. I made my drive time my prayer time, and I would find myself actually wishing that traffic would last longer sometimes, because there were just times of sweet communion with the Lord. Or there's times we maybe wake up in the middle of the night. Or just times of mundane activity. Or sitting in a doctor's office. When you go to a doctor's office today, they got everything there to keep your mind occupied. They got televisions on the wall, magazines everywhere. See, if our minds are filled with spiritual thoughts, then these thoughts will dominate during these periods of time. Because David wrote in Psalm 16, verse 7 and 8, I will bless the Lord who has counseled me. Indeed, my mind instructs me in the night. I have set the Lord continually before me. Because He is at my right hand, I will not be shaken. So he's thinking on Him, setting his mind on Him, instructing Him even in the night. You know, in Deuteronomy 6, 7, in the Shema, the instruction is to teach that fathers are to teach their children these things as they walk along the way, as they sit in the house. In other words, these are things that are to be dominating their mind during these times. But if our mind is more set on other things, things that are earthly and fleshly, then it will be those thoughts that dominate and that will occupy these times. And this is evidence that spiritual thoughts and spiritual things command very little of our affections, occupy very little of our thoughts. Remember the parable of the sower? In Mark chapter 4, verse 19, Jesus speaks of the seed that fell on the path that was snatched away by Satan. Then he talks about the seed that fell on the stony ground and was only temporary, and when affliction or persecution arises, they fall away. But then he says, others are the ones on whom seed was sown among the thorns. These are the ones who have heard the word, and the worries of the world, and the deceitfulness of riches, and the desires for other things enter in and choke the word, and it becomes unfruitful. Why is the word choked? Because that's what the mind is filled with. The worries of the world, the deceitfulness of riches, getting more, having more, keeping, the desires for other things, whatever those other things are, come in to preoccupy and dominate the thoughts and infections. They'll even invade our prayer time and choke the word. Listen, if we cannot give God our spare and idle time, what can we give Him? Prophet Micah chapter 2, verse 1, speaks of those where he says, woe to those who scheme iniquity, who work out evil on their beds. When morning comes, they do it. See, the time which should be spent in spiritual thoughts, they are using it to fill their mind with evil thoughts. So ask ourselves, what thoughts dominate in our mind during these times? These times when they should dominate. Let me give you a third rule. Our attitude. What is our attitude? How are we affected by lack of these times? diversions come in, duties of life, just our own neglect or temptations keep us from them. How does that affect you? See, carnal mind's not bothered by it. They can take it or leave it. They don't feel any loss by it. There's no regret. They don't feel any as though they've been cheated of anything. But the spiritual mind, spiritually minded, it makes us these things that encroach on, that rob us of these times. It makes us more jealous of these times, to guard them closer, to be more watchful against being drawn away from them and say, how could I have gotten drawn away? How could I have not spent the time I should have spent with the Lord today? I mean, what plant can go unwatered and not wither? You have to have that. And where there's not that feeling of loss, it indicates a lack of spiritual mindedness. So how do we increase in spiritual mindedness? Not become spiritual minded. That's only a work of God. But how can we increase in spiritual mindedness? Well, as we said earlier, Colossians 3:16, let the word of Christ richly dwell within you with all wisdom. See, it's not enough just to memorize Bible verses. Memorizing Bible verses doesn't mean the word of Christ richly, fully dwells in you, because it's not with all wisdom. You might be able to repeat a Bible verse but not have a clue what it means in its context or the truths and the principles that it's applying. So the Word of Christ is to richly, fully dwell in you. That means we have to be watchful and careful of what we listen to, what we fill our minds with, what we read. And there is so much out there today that is just pure garbage. So we have to be very watchful, very careful of what we listen to, what we fill our minds with, not just in a spiritual sense, but with anything, because everything has a spiritual connotation to it. Nothing is spiritually neutral. We have to be careful of what we listen and read and fill our minds with. This is why it's so dangerous to listen oftentimes to so-called Christian music, because just like the Hillsong stuff, you might get a little bit of good mixed in there, but there's also a lot of bad that instills and implants false views and false thinking about God and Jesus Christ and salvation and Christianity and the Holy Spirit within our minds. So we have to be very watchful and careful of what we listen and read and fill our mind with. Jesus warned the disciples, take care what you hear. We need to pray for this. As Proverbs 2 says, if you seek her as silver, as fine gold, precious jewels, we pray for this. We ask, seek, knock. And you're diligent in it. We have to walk by faith, not by sight. That is, we have to act on what we do know and walk by faith to be spiritually minded. If we're constantly looking to walk by sight and have everything proved and all our ducks in a row before we actually move or do anything, that's not walking by faith. That's walking by sight, and we can't be spiritually minded if we're always looking to walk by sight and not by faith. Then we have to set our mind on. Let me elaborate on this a little bit. That may seem obvious. Well, of course, you have to set your mind on spiritual things. You say, well, wait a minute. You just said you don't become spiritually minded by thinking on spiritual thoughts. That's right. We're not talking about becoming spiritually minded. We're talking about increasing in spiritual mindedness. We have to set our mind on these things. What's involved in that? That means we have to retain. We have to retain what we read, what we hear, or we're always starting from the beginning. This was the problem with the Hebrews, wasn't it? By now, you should be teachers, but you still have need of someone to teach you the elementary, the ABCs of the things of God. And never retained. See, a forgetful hearer cannot be an effectual doer. For those who don't retain the truth, it's like memory, their mind's like memory foam. You know, memory foam, the impression only lasts as long as there's pressure on it. Remove the pressure and it pops right back to where it was because no impression is made on it. The only impression is when it's actually under what's pushing on it. Once the object is removed, it leaves no impression on the mind. So how do we retain this? Again, it's not just memorizing the Bible or just reading the Bible. How do we retain? Well, first, you have to receive the truth in love. There has to be a love for the truth. How many can remember a favorite line from a movie or a favorite? Just see the movie once and boom, they got a line in it. It sticks in their mind. How many fill their minds and don't have any problem retaining things like sports statistics? Or all sorts of information, but they retain little, if any, spiritual truth. Now, part of that is just because there's a natural hostility to it. The flesh wars against the spirit. But a lot of that is there's no affection for it. See, an affectionate hearer cannot be a forgetful hearer. We'll remember it because we love it. Love aids and assists the memory. This is the way you learn anything, isn't it? And why we retain anything we learn. It's because there's an affinity for it. Now, we can learn a lot of things that we don't retain. Learned a lot of things in school that I learned long enough to take the test, and after that, it was gone out of my mind. But the things you really love, the things that mean are what you retain. Israel forgot God because there was no love for Him. They did not retain Him in their memories. This is the indictment against them. If you remember over in the book of Judges, Judges chapter 2, verse 10, "And all that generation also were gathered to their fathers, and there arose another generation after them who did not know the Lord, nor yet the work which He had done for Israel." Why not? They did not retain them in their memories. Hosea, prophet Hosea, we're in Hosea 13:6, an indictment against Israel states, "As they had their pasture, they became satisfied, and being satisfied, their heart became proud. Therefore, they forgot Me." All their needs were met. Everything was great. They were just sailing along. They were prosperous. And they forgot God. Why? Because they had no affection for Him. They would cry out to Him when things got bad. But because they had no true affection for Him, when things were good, they just forgot Him. Remember the indictment that Paul states over in 2 Thessalonians against those who are deceived by the Antichrist and they perish? And they perish, 2 Thessalonians 2:10, because they did not receive the love of the truth so as to be saved. Their affection was for other things, not the truth. Their minds were set on other things, not the truth. So you can never be spiritually minded without a love for the Word. This is why I say, compare ourselves. Read through Psalm 119. Just in 119 verse 10, "With all my heart I have sought You. Do not let me wander from Your commandments." Wandering from the commandments implies a forgetfulness of them. But if you're seeking with all the heart, there won't be that wandering. See, even when a Christian who might not have the best memory and can't remember the exact words that and repeat verbatim what they heard in a sermon, or they can't remember the exact words of something they read in the Bible, or chapter and verse or book, they'll still retain a sense of that and a power of it in their spirit. It's like sugar in water. You can't see it, but you can taste it. You can taste the effect that sugar has had in the water. It infuses through the water and sweetens it. And this is the effect you see of the Word in the life of a Christian. There's a retention of it, not just in the mind, but in the life. There's a more distrust of their own heart, a more awareness of their own sinfulness, more self-loathing, more of a walking by faith and less by sight, more of setting our mind on things above and less of things on the earth, more crucified to the world and more holy thoughts. So we have to receive the love, receive the Word with the love of the truth. Well, then if the truth were precious, if it were a treasure, we'd remember it, we'd treasure it, we'd store it up. Secondly, to retain it, you need to meditate on what you hear and read. I used to occasionally use an herbicide. It was called Treflan. Treflan is an herbicide that comes as a granule. You spread it, broadcast it on the soil, and work it in the soil, and it keeps weed seeds from germinating. They never even come up. But if you don't work it into the soil, it volatilizes. The active ingredient volatilizes. And it doesn't work. It has to be worked into the soil. It's the same thing with seed. Well, you can scatter seed on the ground, but unless you harrow it and work it into the soil, what's going to happen? Birds will come along and snatch it away. What was the parable of the sower? The seed that fell on the path, what happened? The birds came and snatched it away. This is what meditation does. This is what meditation is to spiritual truth. It covers what otherwise would be lost. What would just vaporize? What would be snatched away by birds? Oh, there are so many truths that are given in a sermon, or so many truths that we might read that are never thought on again once the sermon's over, or once we put the book down, because they're just snatched away. We don't think about them. This is one reason why For me personally, I would rather read a sermon than hear a sermon. Because I can go back and reread. I can meditate on, I can think on something. I can dwell on it. I can underline it. We meditate not just on things we read and the things we hear in a sermon, but we need to meditate just on spiritual truths from the natural world. What did Jesus say? Consider the birds of the air. Consider the lilies of the field. Consider, draw spiritual implications from these things. John Flavel, in one of his works, wrote a work entitled The Heavenly Use of Earthly Things, where he, in his spare time, just made observations from farming, from the sea and sailors, and drew spiritual implications from what he observed from farming, or what they would call husbandry. Let me just read you what the introduction to this, written by another author. He said, there are three things wherein the exercise of godliness chiefly consists: prayer, temptation, and meditation. The object of meditation is twofold. First, the Word. Secondly, the works of God. The works of God are twofold. First, internal. Secondly, external. The external works of God are twofold. First, of creation. That would be, consider the lilies of the field, the birds of the air. Secondly, of providence. The works of providence are likewise twofold. First, in things civil, the Lord ordering and overruling all the affairs and motions of single persons, families, and nations. Secondly, in things natural, the Lord instructing the husbandman, the farmer, to discretion, teaching him how to dress and till the earth that it may give seed to the sower and bread to the eater. Also how to breed up and manage the beasts of the field, both greater and lesser cattle, for the use and service of man. Meditation upon this lower part of the works of God and His wonderful providences about them may raise your souls very high. And then he states, the best of saints on this side of heaven have, though they are not earthly minded only, much earth in their minds, which like a heavy clog at their heels or a weight at their hearts presses them down when they would make an attempt to mount upward in meditation. We find it no easy matter to keep off earthly thoughts when we are most seriously engaged in heavenly work. How hard is it then to get in and be fixed upon heavenly thoughts when we're engaged about earthly work? It is a great part of our holiness to be spiritually minded while we are conversing with God through Jesus Christ in spiritual duties, but to be spiritually minded and to mind spiritual things when we are conversing with the clods of the earth and the furrows of the field, when we have to do with corn and grass, with trees and plants, with sheep and oxen, when we behold the birds and fowls of the air, the worms and all that creep upon the ground, then I say to be spiritually minded and thence to have our thoughts ascend and soaring up to God in heart-affecting and quickening contemplations witnesses a high degree of holiness and of gracious attainments. This is part of meditation. This is how we become more spiritually minded. And meditation is a lost art. Just thinking, taking the time to think on spiritual things. Use that time that God has given you, whether it's drive time, whether it's sitting in a doctor's office, whatever it is, use that time, redeem it, and use it for heavenly purposes. And then thirdly, to become more spiritually minded, we have to purge our mind of all that is not spiritual, to reject what's worldly, reject what is earthly and fleshly. You know, one of the things that the Apostle John said about false teachers, 1 John 4, 5 and 6, they speak as from the world. That's what characterizes them. They speak as from the world. It's characterized by worldliness, earthliness. It's human wisdom, human reasoning, filled and integrated with human wisdom and human reasoning. We have to purge our mind from this and reject what is worldly, fleshly, carnal, unbiblical, sinful. From the world, the flesh, the devil. There's a great gulf between what is spiritual and what is of the flesh. Now, when you do this, you're going to face a lot of opposition from the world. Why do you think like that? What makes you think that way? Nobody else thinks that way. Why don't you think like us? You're weird. You're strange. I don't understand why you think the way you think. So you face a lot of opposition from the world. You'll face opposition from the flesh because the flesh wars against the spirit. It doesn't want to be strange. It wants to fit in. And you'll face opposition from the devil because the devil will use the world and the flesh to oppose spiritual mindedness. He'll try to scare and intimidate you. people offer all sorts of reasons and excuses and justifications for not being spiritually minded, for making compromises to accommodate worldly wisdom and fleshly thinking. See, we are told that Jesus has overcome the world, that He who is in you is greater than he who is in the world, that the foolishness of Christ is wiser than the wisdom of man. As a Christian, you have been given and have the ability to take every thought captive to the obedience of Christ, to bring all into conformity to biblical teaching and thinking and principles. And so the second evidence that we are spiritually minded, if our minds are filled with, if they're dominated by thoughts that are truly spiritual in nature, they abound and abide in our thoughts. And our thoughts abound and abide in spiritual things. They flow naturally from this living fountain, this principle of a new life that has thoughts to match. They're filled with. Therefore, we can walk in a manner worthy of our calling. And by God's grace, and only by God's grace, are we able to do this. Let's pray. Father, we thank You.